Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Empathic Leader. I am Dr. Melissa Robinson-Weinmiller, and I'm so happy to have you here. My guest today is a powerhouse. Carmen Paredes is this action taker, incredible woman that I was honored enough to meet just this past fall. And ever since meeting her, I'm just like, this is what the world of leadership really needs. She's phenomenal. She is the founder of Exceptional Leadership Solutions, which empowers leaders to create high-performing workplaces by leading from within. But understand that a lot of what Carmen brings to the table is because of her own experiences with leaders that were subpar. This isn't someone that stands around and wishes something was different. This is an action taker that gets out and does something about it, which is what we should all be doing. She's a 2-time TEDx speaker. Let that sink in for a second. A best-selling author and an award-winning keynote speaker. And this woman has the skills to pay the bills. She has the cred. She has an engineering background. She has an MBA. She has certified coaching expertise. And I think just recently on LinkedIn, she posted about an honorary doctorate. So I am so excited to have her here with us today. We're going to have a fantastic conversation about leadership, and I can't wait to hear what she has to say. So please welcome my friend Carmen.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Empathic Leader Podcast. Modern leadership isn't getting any easier. We're not just talking about the normal day-to-day stressors. We're also talking quiet quitting, presenteeism, post-pandemic stress, AI, technology, and generational friction, among other things. And the old school command and control style of leadership just doesn't work anymore. I'm Dr. Melissa Robinson-Weinmiller, and I'm coming to you with 2 doctorates, 20-plus years of leadership experience, and I'm on a mission to turn leaders into innovators who drive real-world results. On this podcast, we'll explore how to elevate leadership through the often overlooked power of emotional intelligence and empathy. Let's get started.
Oh, my God. What an introduction, Dr. Melissa. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. It's really an honor.
You deserve nothing less. You're exactly who we need out there. And the fact that you talk about transformative leadership, that is so after my own heart. So when you agreed to do this, I just about did backflips, if I could. No one would want to see that, but I could try, I guess. So let's start with you just giving us kind of a brief background on yourself and just what brought you to this point where you were like, yes, we need to do something to create better leadership. What drives you?
Hey, Dr. Melissa Robinson-Weinmiller here, and I wanted to let you know that my new book, The Empathic Leader, How EQ Via Empathy Transforms Leadership for Better Profit, Productivity, and Innovation, is on pre-sale on Amazon now. Hard copy will come out June 15th, and I'm so excited that this is finally coming to fruition. Please go to Amazon, buy your pre-sale Kindle copy, and we'll see you there.
You know, I worked corporate America for over 25 years. I have always been very driven. I had big ambitions. When I moved to the U.S. From Panama, where I'm from originally, you know, I had big dreams. I wanted the corner office. I wanted the high heel. I wanted all the things that you see in the movies, right? And I found that being smart wasn't enough. And unfortunately, I face not only the gender discrimination, but the ethnicity discrimination. But this girl is like, if you tell me I cannot do something, I'm going to be like, let me show you how to do it. So I push hard to make it. In the way, I learned a lot about myself. I have to admit, in one of my keynotes, I started by talking about this story when I was full of myself, because I was like, you know, any 25-year-old who thinks have all these degrees and credentials and I know how to fix the world. Yeah. And I started working on myself, on me as a person. And everything changed because I learned to see the world with different set of lenses. And when I changed that, what happened is that my leadership changed and the people who worked for me all of a sudden were superstars. It didn't matter what company, what industry, what department, what product, we were always the highest performing teams. then what happened is that everyone wanted to work for me. So it wasn't just the people who were assigned to work for me. Everyone wanted to work for me, which just catapulted my ascension in corporate America until I was able to make it to the top. Now, that was from me down. Unfortunately, I had one or two very good leaders, but the rest, as you said, subpar is probably a good definition. And I realized it wasn't because they were bad humans. It's because they didn't have the skills of empathy, of emotional intelligence, and the compassion to see that we are all humans trying to do the best we can. And sometimes we don't have the skills. So as leaders, I feel that we have the responsibility to not only tell people what to do, but to bring the best of them to the table so we can all win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's exactly like you said, right? A rising tide raises all ships. So if you as a leader bring everyone around you up, everybody excels, everything rises, everything gets better. And one thing that you said that actually caught my attention, because I talk about how leaders need to be able to employ self-empathy, and that a lot of times they are very driven. I mean, these are very smart, very highly self-actualized people. You know, I mean, they are driven. They want, they're gunners. That's what they want. But because of that, sometimes they don't show empathy to themselves. They're the ones that work harder, that will go farther, that will stay later, that will do all the stuff. And in the process, it means that they end up wounding themselves. That's why we have so many leaders that burn out, so many with substance abuse problems, so many with family problems.
I burn out so badly that I literally almost died. And it's like, right, like I had stomach ulcers that were bleeding. But it was because of the self-imposed expectations, right? When I talk about that, and I talk about it in my TEDx, I realized after the fact, of course, at first I was blaming everyone. But when I did the introspection, it's like, it wasn't my company's fault. It wasn't my boss's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault. It was my fault. I'm the one who said, you need to work 80 hours a week, crazy woman, to try to prove a point, to try to mitigate the inadequacies that I had, right? My fear, my anxieties, my internal voice, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it was something. Mm-hmm. But you did the hard work. You did the self-reflection, so that you could give yourself the self-empathy and become the kind of leader that can display it then. Because if you can't show empathy for yourself, how can you possibly show it for anybody else? Mm-hmm. And you did the hard work to be able to do that. So, I mean, I got to give you huge cred for that, because it's dirty work.
It is very, it's hard, it's painful. I can see how nobody wants to do it. But I'm going to tell you something. I wouldn't trade it for nothing. It's the best work I've done. I still do it, because you're never done. This is just an never-ending evolution that we all have as humans. And the more awakened or conscious that you are, the more conscious you need to become. But it's my non-negotiable. That is one of my non-negotiables. And I was coaching a leader yesterday, and she was like, oh, but I fell backwards. Like, I feel like I'm going backwards. I'm like, no. You had a moment of humanness, but you recognized it, that you fell back to bad behaviors. But a year ago, before we started coaching, that would have been a train. Like, you know, everyone who got in your way would have been like, strike, like playing, you know, bowling, right? Like, it'll be all kind of things. But now, no, you stopped. You feel bad. It's okay. But you don't have to beat yourself for it, because it's an evolution.
Exactly. Yes. And that's a fantastic point for other people and for yourself. It's really funny, because we can be so hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, if someone else said to us some of the stuff we say to ourselves or drove us this hard, we just like toss them out the door. I'd be like, forget it. I'm not dealing with you. But yet I do it to myself.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think a lot of us that are very, very driven do.
Yeah. All the time. I always tell my kids, is like, if anyone will talk to you the way you talk to yourself, they will be in the, blog list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good job, Mom. That's because it's true. It's real. And we do that. Mm-hmm. You know? So I want to talk a little bit about the transformative leadership part of your style, because that really is something that's near and dear to my heart. And so I'd like to hear what that means to you.
And it touches a little bit with what we're talking about. So I feel, and my framework is based on the premise that in order to achieve the most exceptional results, because I have this this theme that great is not good enough anymore. You have to be exceptional. In order to achieve those exceptional results that are going to set you apart in a very competitive market, regardless of the industry that you are, you have to first transform the way you operate. So the transformation starts within. Starts with awareness of the conditioning that we all have. You have to go sometimes to your childhood or your adolescence or a relationship you had with a loved one, spouse or friends. The way that we show up at work is always a reflection of how we are trying to protect ourselves from interaction with humans, with other people, right? Because it activates the fight or flight. So before you can show up authentically, fully supportive, inspired in everything you need to be a great leader, you need to be aware of your thermostat. What are the things that trigger you? And that is the dirty work that you were talking about, like starts within. And then you can start projecting that outside with being transformational with your teams. Like, how you transform it is how you help them grow. We're all here in this planet to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying, right? And so how you support their evolution as professionals, as people, as community members, and as a leader, I feel like that is our responsibility.
So you don't expect them to leave their human beingness at the door when they come to work?
Absolutely not. That's what makes a workplace so, you know, rich and fulfilling, right? Yeah. And it makes it different than what it would be if only robots are working there.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in an age where we may not be far off from having that, you know, choice to have only robots working there for a lot of different fields.
Right, right. You know? But that is why exceptional leadership, it's the differentiator going forward, because, you know, AI can tell you what to do, how to do it, but as long as there is any human in the room, AI cannot empathize and understand and be compassionate with everything that's happening to that person. I mean, think about it. At any given time, your highest performer could be fighting with their spouse, their parents could be ill, their kids can be in trouble, they might be in financial stress, they might have caught the flu, or, you know, so many things that can happen. Yet, we expect them to perform like everything is 100% tuned and life is full of roses and unicorns when it's not.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, one thing I keep seeing, and maybe you see this with your clients as well, is that the more it looks like we're going to start relying on AI, the more we add technology, the more we bring in these technological marvels that can't empathize, the leaders that can are going to be the ones to be supercharged for the future.
Yes.
You know, I mean, these are the people that if they can smell what's cooking, you know, and they know what's coming, they're actually aligning themselves to be the next generation of superstars.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, because you have the leaders who just follow orders from the leaders. Right? You have the bosses that follow orders from the leaders. And then you have the managers that maybe can keep a nice flow of the now. And then leaders are the visionaries who can anticipate what the next strength, what the next challenge, what's the next turn that needs to happen. and can accommodate everyone's broken emotions and fears and, you know, anxiety as well. We're changing everything.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's it. We've got nothing else to add. That's it. That's right. I mean, what else is there to say? Because it's true. We promote people into these leadership positions. And it's because they bring in the biggest contracts. They bring in the most revenue. They do the best job technologically. But that doesn't mean that they're leaders. Mm-hmm. Leadership is an action, not a position.
Yeah.
So to have that gift for being visionary, we forget that piece, which is why I was curious about the transformational leadership and what that meant to you, because to me, it all goes together.
You know, about 10 years ago, I was sent from my company to a very high-end leadership training. This is when I was like a senior director, so very few selected people who had the capacity to make it to vice president and senior vice presidents were sent. It was like 10 of us.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, great. 10 years ago. I mean, a lot have changed within Carmen.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, great. I'm going to get all the strategies and tactics and how to be a better leader. And when we got there, we found everything but that. And it was almost like they were putting this huge mirror in front of us. And it was really, really uncomfortable because we were, I remember they had this exercise. We were asked to give ourselves a name at our worst time. Like when we lose it, what would people call us? And it was so humbling to realize how bad can it be, right? Like when you disconnect from your authentic self and succumb to the pressure of the job and become just this horrible person that you didn't even like, right? But that was the first moment when I started to kind of like understand how you show up at work. It's like the snowball effect, starts in snowball effects that can totally like devastate your department or rise it up. It's like, it's all in your hands. Like you, your tone, your demeanor, your disposition, your attitude sets up the tone for everything. Every day, every quarter, every year.
Yep, it does. Because as a leader, someone is always watching. You are on stage, whether you think of it that way or not. And yes, someone is going to notice.
Yes. Yes.
So when you're talking about some of these subpar leadership experiences that you've had, and now you're moving forward into the coaching realm, how do you feel that these inform how you coach your clients and how you kind of guide and mentor them?
The last couple of years of my corporate career, I had already awareness. I already been practicing what I preach now and what I teach now with amazing results. And the last piece of the puzzle for me was being able to be compassionate towards those support leaders too. And when I was able to unlock that, it just brought me so much peace because I was very good at ignoring what was happening above and sometimes to the sides of where I was and really protecting the energy and what I projected to my people. I was really good at that. Mm-hmm. But behind closed doors, not going to lie that I got rattled, I got upset, I got frustrated for the way I was being treated. And so when I was able to step back and understand with a compassionate set of eyeglasses what they were coming from, you know, these are just unhealed individuals that have no idea how they're showing up.
Yeah.
Right. And so nothing was personal. It wasn't against Carmen. This was just the reflection of their own internal turmoil or lack of empathy and emotional intelligence. It really like supercharged my leadership too, because even if I wasn't consciously letting that affect me, it was, right? It affects you a little bit. Even if you are great at like blocking it, the fact that you have to block it affects your energy. And so when I help leaders, and it's usually that, because you see a lot of those subpar leaders in the workplace. And again, not because they are bad human beings. It's because they don't have the tools, because many of them have been promoted because they are brilliant at their individual contributor jobs. And now it's like, okay, well, next career path, it's you're going to be the chief, blah, blah, blah. And they have no idea how to be a leader. Not everybody is called to be a leader. It's a very specific set of skills that you don't learn from a textbook. You learn with experience and the willingness to transform how you show up.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Yes, and that's absolutely right, because you've got to have that willingness to transform yourself. If you're not willing to look within first, and I mean, a lot of the leaders that I've worked with, they really do kind of suffer at their own hands with a lot of self-judgment. Imposter syndrome is a huge one. A lot of times they know they're not doing the best leader job, but they don't feel they can ask for help because they have to be strong and they have to be the leader and they have to be, you know, the top dog. And they're hurting themselves at the same time as they're hurting others. And it's exactly like you said, it's not that they're evil. In fact, just the opposite, they're hurting too. But they don't quite know how to progress beyond that, which is why I want to give you, and I did give you credit for that self-reflection, because that's the hard part. That's the part that none of us want to do it. I don't want to dig in the dirt and figure out what's going on inside either. But
You know, it's funny because it gets addictive. Now I'm like, every time I see something like, ooh, okay, got to dig on it. And yeah, it's like, I don't tolerate any of those. I mean, again, it happens. I'm human, right? Like I can lose my illumination status. But immediately I catch myself on the act, and I was like, okay, let's go. What is triggering that? And it just takes a little bit of self-reflection. And yeah, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, that is back to like when I was 12 years old and someone said this to me, and it's like, why is that coming up? But it is always like that. And then what you do with that, right? What do you do with that is you have to forgive yourself, forgive the other people, because there is no win on holding to these grudges. Like, we are so good at doing that because we think we're protecting ourselves. But it just hurts so many parts of your body, like your physical health, your emotional health, your mental health. And we can be all so happy. And we can be so happy at work. Like, I had that philosophy. And you know what? One of the things that fills me of gratitude and rejoicement more than anything is when my old employees seek me out to go have coffee or go have a drink or invite me to lunch or dinner. They didn't have to. I mean, like, I haven't been in an office environment as a leader for almost 4 years. And these people that, you know, used to work for me still want to hang out with me. And that only means one thing, right?
Yeah.
That I did an okay job.
Better than okay. I mean, you're the kind of leader that they remembered. Because that's one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, when I try and think back on the people that have been leaders for me or you know, even peripherally, the ones that didn't do well, unless they were just that bad, just kind of slips through my memory. I don't really remember them, but the few that were truly leaders are the ones that I remember. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. Yes. You know,
and so, it's great. It's like, shouldn't that be the way, considering the amount of time you spend with your work family?
Yes.
That you are lead, and you have to become best friends with everybody. I mean, it's impossible, right? But like, do you care? Do you actually care? And don't pretend to care, because we can smell it. Like, we know when you are just putting an act, and it's even worse than not caring at all.
Yes.
But when you are actually living 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day, 5 days a week for years to come, right? Like, the least you can do is to care about these people.
Yes.
And so what, how do you show that you care about somebody? You are curious about their life. You notice if their mood changes, if something is off, if all of a sudden they are not performing. People don't just stop performing because one day they woke up like, I'm just going to suck at this today. You know? Yeah. I mean, nobody says that, right? And so it's like, oh, something might be going on. And so as you would with a friend or someone in your family, you know, you would ask, you would be forward trying to support that person.
Yes.
I think we're also afraid of what HR is going to say, right? And so I'm a Latina, right? So I'm a hugger. I hug everybody. And it's never been a problem because there's a respect. There's boundaries and you're not doing anything to make anyone uncomfortable, right? But no, I care about my people. And if someone doesn't like that, well, too bad.
Yes, because we're humans first, and we were humans long before HR was created. We were humans long before work was created the way we do it now. We've been humans since the very beginning, and that's what needs to come first.
And you know what is the saddest part? So my youngest son, he's in the spectrum, and he has a Latina mom, right? So I got called by the principal, by the school, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago, that a para teacher, so the special needs teacher, was complaining that he was hugging her too much. Seriously? And so, but here's the thing, how it ties to this conversation. We're training people so early in school. This is fourth grade, by the way. We're training people to be disconnected from their feelings since they are kids. How are they going to develop any type of emotional intelligence and empathy if we don't let them express their feelings?
Yes. Thank you. Because that's another thing that, so a lot of European countries, some Asian countries, maybe you experienced this being from Panama, they actually teach what's called social emotional learning. And this is in the school systems. It starts with kids as young as like 6 and it can go up to 16, and empathy and emotional intelligence is part of this. It's in the schools. It's not something to be avoided. It's not something to be put in a box. Don't do that. Don't do that. It's actually taught so that these kids understand how it works with group settings. And like some of the countries that traditionally have happiest nation status, like Denmark, you know, they teach it from 6 to 16. Mm-hmm. And they're some of the happiest nations in the world.
Yeah.
What are we missing?
I think we swing the pendulum too far to the side, right? Like, and it seems like that is the way society always thought. It's like, oh, you know, we went from the Great Depression to peace and love to, you know, we're not going to be tree huggers to what we are now. And then maybe, you know, I have teenagers and they are the most, how do I say this politically correct? oversensitive, right? Everyone is abusing everybody. And I think it's like, no, you don't have to be paranoid either, right? Like, and so I just feel like we tend to swing the pendulum and we have to find balance on everything, right? I was once told by a leader, well, this empathy thing and this caring for your people is not going to work because they are not going to perform, except that I have data to prove the opposite. But what I told him was, it's a balance. You can care about someone and still put them in a performance improvement plan. Yes. Like you would with your kids. The fact that you ground them doesn't mean that you don't love them. And so are you willing to have that difficult conversation? And if you don't, then that's also some of the transformative work you have to do with yourself as a leader. Because why are you so afraid to be perceived as someone who is giving constructive criticism?
Right. And in fact, sometimes being willing to take those hard steps shows you care that much more. Because you're willing to help people grow even when it's difficult.
Absolutely. You know?
Having empathy doesn't mean you don't put up boundaries. You have boundaries, and there are things that need to be done. But if you care enough to help these people and help them rise and help them grow and do better, you know, it sometimes it can be a sign of caring as opposed to the other way around, right?
And you know, as a coach, you probably experienced that too. As a coach, that's one of my favorite parts, right? Because it's like, we're paid to do that. And yeah. So the other day I had this coaching, and within a minute, I'm like, okay, are you ready for Carmen? I understand how you think what you're saying makes sense, because it makes logical sense. But from an outsider perspective, which is what coaching does, right? Like, I'm objective, right? I'm not in the middle of the emotions and that. I'm like, no, like, this is totally your fault, and you can fix it because it's your fault. Which, you know, people is like, oh my God, it's my fault, I'm doomed. It's like, no. When it's something that you are doing to create a situation, you have 100% ownership and be able to fix it.
Yes.
Which is great. It's like, please tell me it's my fault. It's in my control to fix it.
Yeah. And because of that, now I can do something about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, that all comes with emotional intelligence, because you have to have the maturity to be aware that, oops, maybe I am not showing up the best way, or authentically, or in integrity, or with humbleness, and I can change it.
Yes. From here going forward, I can be the leader that I want to be.
Exactly.
I can be the person that I want to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One more question for you. Are you ready?
I'm not nervous.
Don't worry, it won't be graded. So if you can think of one leader, alive or dead, famous or not famous, that has influenced you and you're growing into the kind of leader you want to be, who would it be and why?
You know, I do have a leader that I still friends with her. And in my TEDx, I talk about the tale of two leaders. I had the one who I thought was responsible for my burnout, but I had the one earlier in my career that, while going through burnout, was able to pull me out of it. And when I came back from my life crumbling, I said, I want to be like her. Her name is Gina Borland, and she was employee number 28 on what is now the largest telecommunications company in Alaska. And when I went to work for her, everyone was like, you are crazy, because she's so demanding. And I'm like, great. She was the best leader I had. Absolutely fantastic, not only because she had this amazing brain, but because her heart was in the right place. And that was when I was about, I'm going to say, late 20s, maybe early 30s, a long time ago. And I, after working for her, I said, this is who I'm going to be. I'm going to care about the people first, and the results are going to come with it. And that's how it worked.
That's fantastic. And yes, those are the kind of leaders that we need. I don't even know what to say about it other than yes.
I consider myself lucky, because I know most people don't have that person. Especially being a woman, because I find that women with women can be catty, you know, how we can get sometimes. She also taught me that there's no competition. There's no competition.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to send her this episode. She's retired. She retired at 50. That was another thing. I'm like, I'm going to do that too. And, but yes, I will definitely send her this episode. You know, when I told her that I talked to her about in my TEDx, and I didn't mention her name there, but I told her it was her, and I played to her during lunch. She was like so emotional. It was precious.
Well, that's fantastic. And good for her. Good for you for giving her the kudos, and good for her. Carmen, if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to see you as the fabulous coach that you are, if they want to watch your TEDx, we'll have a lot of your links in the show notes, but where can they find you?
I think LinkedIn is the easiest place to find me just because I'm very active there. And you know, you can DM me or comment in any of my videos. So it's, I am Carmen Paredes. So the LinkedIn blur that comes, and then I am Carmen Paredes.
Perfect. Good. Well, I hope you have lots of people reaching out for you because we need people training the leadership of the future. And I am so appreciative to have you here today. Thank you so much. And we will let you know when this comes out so that we can get your word out to everybody.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. Can't wait. And thank you to the audience for, you know, hanging out with us today and listening to two friends talk about leadership.
Absolutely. And thanks to everybody for listening in today. We will see you next week for another episode. Bye for now.
Well, that's a wrap for the Empathic Leader Podcast for today. If you found today's episode valuable, please subscribe and share, and let's keep this conversation rolling. Until next time, lead with empathy to lead with impact, and always keep a cool head and a warm heart.